You are listening to episode 108 of the Golf Rules Questions podcast. And in this episode podcast, Man of the People, McPhee, talks about a lot of rules situations from the last few weeks on tour, including sprinkler boxes, an original and provisional ball in the same area, and rabbit holes. We also have a few clubland stories from the real people and, of course, our Golf Rules question of the week to answer.
So whether you're in your car or going for a walk, enjoy this episode of the Golf Rules Questions podcast.
Stuart's one of our highest ranked working rules officials that we have. One of the best we've got. And he knows his stuff.
Hey everyone, Golf Rules Questions podcast number 108 coming at you from Blakey's living room. Why do I speak in the third person? I don't know. I'm Blakey. This is Stuart McPhee, otherwise known as Podcast McPhee. And yeah, number 108, I think.
Hey Blakey.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Just finished another two tour events since we last spoke, and I believe you may be joining us for this one coming up.
Yes, there is one on the horizon for me. What are the two events that you did?
I did WPS Murray River at Cobramberga Golf Club.
WPS, for those that don't know, is World Player Series. No, WebEx Player Series.
Yes, WebEx Player Series. So that's where it involves men and women playing for the same trophy. And we can talk about that if you wish, about the amount of thought that goes into setting up the golf course, which no one else sees, but setting up the golf course to ensure the women and the men are teeing off within certain range of each other, they're landing their tee shots, and then having similar clubs or not too far away to make it equitable. And there's a lot of analysis that goes into, at the end of the day, right, where are all the women's scores? Where are the men's scores? Back nine, the women, or particular holes, the women played that hole better, men played that hole better by 0.37 strokes. It was very, very interesting for me to see all that because none of that's in the rule book, right, so that sort of stuff. So, and the second one was just on the weekend, the WPS Victoria at Rosebud Country Club, the composite course, which was in fact, both courses were in incredible condition. Cobramberga was unbelievable. For a course that's not the middle of nowhere, but in a country town, it was unbelievable condition. I hope it looked that good on TV because it was like a sandbelt fairway. Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
Who manages that facility?
No idea.
Is it RACV?
I don't believe so. No, they've got they do have a resort in Cobra.
Oh, it's Sporties Club.
Yeah.
That's right.
RACV do have a resort there.
That's right. Who won those two tournaments?
Same player won both.
Really?
Yeah.
And what country is he from?
You know where he's from.
He learned his golf in New Zealand, is that right?
I don't know where he learned it, but that's where his the initials after his name are NZL.
Well, he moved from
whatever that means.
Japan when he was an infant, so I don't think he learned it in Japan.
Probably not.
That's Kazuma, fantastic.
Yeah, Kazuma won both. Fantastic. And I'll tell you what, the last hole, it was destined for a playoff just on the weekend, and he made a putt from easily 12 foot to par after having come out of the bunker, and there were two others sitting one stroke behind ready to pounce in a playoff, but he made the putt. I was standing right there trying to avoid the cameras and standing right next to him when he made the putt.
Not on the green.
Not right next to him.
He was standing on the green trying to avoid the cameras.
Right behind.
He was... Podcast McPhee was Kazumi's shadow.
That's not quite true. It wasn't that close. It was pretty close.
Acting as a second caddy, that's what he was doing. Right, Golf Rules question of the week, 107. If you can read that out,
please. Yeah, after his tee shot, Andy, the average golfer's ball, is lying close to an irrigation box in the right rough on the third hole at Wombat Hills. He is concerned he will have interference from the box, so he simulates his swing and in doing so causes his ball to move. He advises his marker that he moved his ball and he replaces the ball. He does have interference from the box, however he decides the shot is too risky, so he doesn't take relief and he plays out sideways to the fairway. His next stroke lands on the putting green and he takes three putts to hole out. What is his hole score?
So I think when I first attempted this, I got this one wrong, simply because there is a small sentence in 9.4 that gets him out of the penalty.
So yeah,
for causing his ball to move.
Yeah, so there's five exceptions to 9.4B, and this is hidden deep in one of those exceptions.
Yeah, so it's in the number four, it's when applying a rule, and it's number three, dot point four. Take relief under a rule, including determining whether relief is available under a rule, such as swinging a club to see if there's interference from a condition, which is exactly what the average golfer was doing. So he doesn't get a penalty in this case for causing his ball to move in the rough, in the general area. Okay, so he caused his ball to move in the general area, which would normally be a penalty, but because it was accidental movement when applying a rule other than on the putting green, there is no penalty. And he three putted for a six.
I have received.
Yep. Third, what's the par score of the third hole?
I don't know. Let's make it four.
I think he's had a double bogey. It's a good score for the average golfer. So that was a good question. A very good question. Now, we're finished with that. We do have a couple of Clubland stories that we're going to get to, but we've also got a few stories of yourself at these tournaments recently. Do you want to fire away?
Yeah, I've got, in no particular order, one involved a ball search. So the 15th at Cobbenbrooga had a lot of ball searches right off the tee. And a call came over the radio and I knew the answer straight away. But the call was related to the player is searching for both the original ball but also the provisional ball. And the question was simply, are they allowed 3 minutes for each ball? And as you and I both know, well, it depends. In some situations, you are allowed separate 3 minute search times for each, and in other times, you are only allowed 1 3 minute search time for both. Now, even though I knew the answer, it took me just a few minutes to actually find where is that written, and it is in the definition of lost.
Right.
And it's the second clarification for lost. Search time when searching for two balls. When a player has played two balls, such as a ball in play and provisional, and searching for both, whether the player is allowed 2 separate 3 minute search times depends on the circumstances. If the balls are in the same vicinity where they can be searched for at the same time, the player is allowed only 1 3 minutes to search for both balls. And that was definitely the case in this situation, which the call came over the radio from that official, just to clarify that particular rule. And that player was allowed only 3 minutes to search for both.
It's really interesting the wording that they use there in that clarification of the definition. In the same vicinity where they can be searched for at the same time, but if the likelihood is that the locations of the balls are too far apart. Now that is very grey, okay? What is the same vicinity? Is it within 10 metres, 20, 40 metres? Too far apart? Does that mean you have to, it's going to take more than 10 seconds to walk from one to the other? I guess that's up to the player and the marker to determine that. And if they're not sure, then they can call in a referee or get the committee involved. You know, we're talking on tour, but what do you do in Clubland? What are your thoughts around that podcast, around too far apart?
So a couple of thoughts come to mind. One, the obvious is when they're on either side of the fairway. That to me is the obvious, being two separate, clearly separate search areas.
I agree
and
with that.
Definitely go and search for the original first because you want to find that and keep playing it. And then if it's on the other side of the fairway, that's clearly, I would think if you've used the same club, if you've hit driver with both gone right, I would think that's probably, they're going to be roughly in the same area. If you went driver and then said, oh, that's no good, I'm just going to go safety for my provisional and pull out a 5-iron, then you could probably make an argument, well, they're probably going to be at least X metres away from each other, therefore two separate search areas. Again, a lot of these things, there's no, it's like, you know, in 13.3 about a ball overhanging the hole, right? There's no, you've got X seconds to get to the hole. It's no, that's a reasonable amount of time because you could have hit that shot from 200 metres away or 2 metres away. In this particular case, they can't set the balls must be estimated to be within 25 metres of each other. or 30 yards of each other. I think you're right. It's up to the people on the ground to use their reasonable judgment.
What if you like hit this really bad rope hook with a driver, and then you pulled the 5-iron, and the 5-iron was actually further than the driver by 25 metres. Would you consider that the same vicinity?
It could be, yeah. I think 25 metres is... it happened to me at the New South Wales Open last year. A player actually denied relief to on the 18th hole on Sunday. Same player, who was effectively 5 off the tee, was searching for original and provisional both down the left-hand side. And I timed the original, thinking, where's the provisional? He goes, oh, yeah, I hit it left as well. I said, well, I'll take you back to the tee. He goes, oh, hang on, I want to search for my provisional. And I had to have the conversation. Hang on a second, haven't we been searching for both? Aren't they both in the same area? And he sort of, oh, yeah, sort of. And I go, well, you know.
You only get 3 minutes.
Yeah, you've hit driver with both of them. They're both left in the trees here somewhere. And you've been walking back and forth 100 metres.
Yeah.
You know, clearly you're searching for both.
Yeah.
Even not intentionally, you are covering a pretty wide area.
Well, that's another thing. If you have a lot of tall trees, who's to say that when you get to the start of the trees, you're not starting to look? And it could have hit the tree and bounced back, or it could have gone through, and that's 100 metre difference.
And, you know, you've seen this at tournaments. You could have 100 people searching for a ball. Now, I know it only comes down to the player and caddy, but when you've got a lot of people searching, I know they're not officially part of it, but it's just a pretty big area being covered. You could make an argument that, well, we're sort of searching for both. Because you'll certainly take it if someone finds your ball, won't you? Yeah. You're like, no, leave it there. I'll turn around 10 times and I'll go and find it. You're going to take it, you know, you take the advantage of having someone else found your ball. Yeah. As someone said to me not so long ago, Tiger Woods has never lost a golf ball. There's always 5,000 people searching for it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I think. I think it's just reasonable.
That's the same with me, though. Like, I have a lot of crowd following me when I'm playing and just really struggle to lose a golf ball because of the massive crowd that's following me.
Normally heckling you.
Actually, I lost a golf ball yesterday when I'm talking about it. It's an interesting thing. Like, so is there where they can be searched for at the same time? You know, obviously the player and the player's caddy start the search, or in a four-wall partner and partner's caddy as well, they start the search. But if they're being searched for by other people, is that included?
We know technically it's not, but practically. But the other thing is, when you're doing a search, you don't stand in one spot and just scan a 5 metre radius circle, do you?
No, that's right.
You pace it out and you're walking.
You are searching. You have no idea. If you knew it was within the sort of 5 metre circle,
you are moving around, aren't you?
That makes a lot of sense. If you go, yeah, no, I know it was right beside this.
I just need to find it.
And my provisional was 25 metres up there.
Yeah.
You know, if they knew that it was within that
tuft of grass or that thick grass.
Or the face of a bunker.
Yeah, didn't bounce out, just need to find it.
Yeah,
that's fair. We know it's in a very small area, piece of an A4 letter paper. We know that's...
And that's why, I guess that's why it says, depends on the circumstances of each situation.
Agreed, yeah.
If you came into the area and you asked, oh, have you hit a provisional? Where's the provisional? Oh, it's also in this area.
Would
you say, okay, we've got 3 minutes for the both? Or would you wait till 2:59 and go, okay, it's all done for both of them now?
Well, I definitely never wait till 2:59 because I always, and you know, you do a lot of timing for ball searches at tournament. You see someone searching 200 metres away, you'll start the clock.
It's actually a very common ruling that we give a lot. And the funny thing about it is it sounds so simple, and we talk about just, you know, being really good at common rulings. But it sounds so simple, but it's the interaction with the player that you have you're learning the experience or the understanding. A, you know, making sure you have a ground understanding of the rules.
Yeah.
But also, you know, telling the player, okay, you've got 30 seconds left and, you know, when it is the 3 minutes, saying it's 3 minutes now.
I say time. Yeah.
Not when it's 3 minutes and 10 going, through 3 minutes, 10 seconds ago, and they go, oh, well, I found the ball 5 seconds ago.
So I learned this from you, and now I've started doing this. When I arrive in an area, I'll go, whose ball are we searching for? Is anyone timing it straight away?
Are they left-handed or right-handed?
Haven't worked that out yet. I haven't answered yet.
You learned that one, mate.
I won't that later.
That was a different one.
Oh, that was the wrong green. No, I asked, whose ball is it? And is anyone timing? And I came across a guy at Heritage New Zealand guy who plays a lot overseas, and I've gone, is anyone timing? He goes, here, and he held up his... So he said, no, we get in trouble if we don't time. And he had a timing going.
On European tour?
Asia somewhere. Yeah, and he said, we get in trouble, and then we're told to time. And he was timing it.
European tour.
And I thanked him afterwards, because we found it.
Yeah.
And he said, no, we're told afterwards, and he hit it. He said, no, we're told. I said, no, I appreciate it. Good on you for doing it.
The European tour are told to, they have to time.
Yeah, and I think that's a good idea.
You know, and at the end of the day, you know, the 3 minutes is 3 minutes. It's black and white. And everyone gets it, and it shouldn't be different for anyone.
No.
And it's just all about protecting the field.
And if there's other players and other caddies in that area, they probably like to hear when an official referee comes in and go, whose ball, who's timing it, what are we up to?
That's definitely a time that they want the referee to... Because it can be quite a bit of an awkward situation. You go, oh, that's 3 minutes. Oh, I found it. Oh, was it three? Oh. That's not a nice situation.
No, had to nick a hern at Cathedral. We're timing it, and then we had 50 people, and literally 5 to 6 seconds after I said that's time, the spectator goes, here it is.
Yeah.
And of course, he looked at me and goes, yeah, I said, it's time.
Yeah.
We're done. Sorry. I've got a few more for you. Nothing that exciting, but just, you know, real things that have happened. One was boundary object. I actually sent you this photo from Cobram Brook, left of the first hole. Player was right up against it. You had the big posts, which you couldn't even knock over with a car. You know, they're that strong in the ground. And then it had the steel cable in between those posts. And he wanted relief from the steel cables. And of course, I said, well, it's a boundary object. You can't. And then,
you didn't use that word, did you?
What?
Don't worry.
I didn't say that. I said, no, it's actually marking the
bend. It's just funny because the derogatory words start with C.
Oh, you can't. No, I say.
Oh,
is that what you're saying?
In case you're repeating it.
I don't know exactly what the word... This was a junior.
You cannot. It's probably an easier way to say it on this podcast.
I normally say, unfortunately, you...
it's so funny.
You don't get relief for that. It is a boundary object. Then he wanted to know about backing into it because the steel cable's obviously moved.
Yep.
And you and I had this conversation about... And he was very... using least intrusive. He very gently leant up against the cables, probably moved them out of the way, not very far, and made a really awkward stroke.
Always thought about that. Okay, so it's really funny that a lot of people don't realise that you don't get free relief from a boundary object. I still, to this day, cannot believe how many people don't realise you don't get free relief from a boundary object.
Hmm.
But... the next one is the cables or the fence or the netting or whatever. That's still part of the boundary object. The posts are what define the out of bounds. But the cables, that's all part of the boundary object. But it's just like, it's sort of similar to a tree in that you can back into the tree and take your stance. You can back into the netting and fairly take your stance in the least intrusive way.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is that element of taking a stance and bending or slightly manoeuvring these cables or netting or whatever. I've always, you know, wondered whether just moving that immovable obstruction boundary object.
Mm.
You know, you get and you've improved your conditions, but it is in fairly taking a stance.
It's one of the permissions. Fairly taking a stance by taking reasonable actions to get to the ball.
Yeah.
Take a stance. And he was taking reasonable actions. He wasn't
very
aggressive. He just gently leant against the cables and, as I said, still had it awkward. Yep. I think he moved it 5 metres.
Yeah.
You know, he was penalised by the fact he was almost out of bounds.
Yeah.
So boundary object, I had a guy call me over who was just left rough and he was in amongst dirt. And right in front of his ball was a mound of dirt about half the height of his ball. And he called me over and he said, what can I clear away here? So we can clear away any loose impediments, all those little twigs and acorns and gum nuts, you can move all those out of the way. He said, what about that little bit of dirt in front of my ball? I said, you can't. I said, you cannot. I said, you're not permitted. I said, you're not permitted to, I use the word excavate, I think. I said, you can't be excavating stuff out of the way to if it's going to improve. I said, and I actually got down on my knees. I said, if we clear that dirt out of the way, that's going to improve your line of play because it's right in front of your ball.
It wasn't a worm cast.
No, it was all just dirt.
Because that's a funny one. Mm. Like if it's a worm cast or an anthill, it's clearly the same amount of dirt, same type of dirt that's 3 inches away.
Mm.
But because it's made by an animal, it's now a loose impediment.
This was not a loose impediment. It was just dirt.
What if a player tried to argue that it was? They said, oh, I know that there's little bugs in the area that make these little mounds.
Yeah, I mean...
What would you do then?
I don't see it that way. I don't see it the same way.
So you just tell the player and say...
Well, I think at some point, at some times, we do need to... I mean, I don't think I've had too many instances where a player has strongly disagreed with me.
Gotcha.
I'm sure that day will come. You say, well, I don't see it that way. And then, of course, we know on the local rules, certainly the events I'm involved in, it says the referees are authorised to make a final decision.
Yeah.
If you... Not the player. If you want a second opinion, call for it. Not the player. We don't allow second opinions for players.
Now, so it's interesting. There's actually I'm pretty sure you've seen this video. There's a video from 15 years ago or 12 years ago of one of your great mates, Graham Scott, who's on the PGA Tour of Australasia. And he was with Bubba at a WGC. No, it was a USPGA. And Bubba wanted relief from ants, and Scotty was like, I don't think that they are dangerous animal situations or dangerous animal conditions, or it was 14 years ago, so whatever the definition was at the time. Anyway, he actually rang up, got on the radio and said, hey, just checking, are there any dangerous animals or ants that are considered dangerous animals here on this course this week? And the committee came back and said, no, not that we're aware of. And Scotty delivered the news to the player, hey, there's no free relief from those ants. And then Bubba said some smart-ass comment about, oh, well, I'm going to have to try and... What if there was something like those poor ants are going to die or something like that? But it's always the point there, it's always a really good procedure to actually get on the radio and ask if there is any sort of animals.
Especially if you're in a foreign country.
Yeah, like I was just thinking of the Olympics in 2000. Was that 14?
16
in Brazil. You know, they had a lot of these animals that dug holes and stuff like that. And birds that dug holes or something. Don't quote me on that. But, that was, and especially if you come to Australia and you're always like, oh, there's snakes everywhere. So not all snakes are, you know. We only have 7 of the top 10 deadliest snakes in the world. And, you know, not all of them.
Some of them are pretty friendly.
Exactly. Most of the time, they just want to get out of the way.
Certainly do.
Some kangaroos are more aggressive than others. Like the big red ones are more aggressive than the grey ones. The grey ones are just want to get the fuck out of there.
Or they just want to sleep.
Sorry, just want to get out of there.
They don't want to be bothered at all.
Yeah, exactly. All they do is just eat grass.
Like a cat, just want to just leave me alone.
Yeah, that's right. Don't go and pat it like a cat.
No.
And they don't meow, but they are not, they're a bit more placid or timid than everyone sort of understands.
Oh, I've got a few more quick ones for you.
I just want to talk about, I saw this sort of discussion the other day on one of the Facebook groups, intervening events. And I'm sure we've talked about it before, and I just want to bring it up again. Intervening events obviously can, if there is an intervening event between two of the same type of penalty, you can actually be penalised twice. Correct me if any of this paraphrasing is incorrect. But what is an intervening event? Well, actually having a conversation about there being a possible penalty for the action just taken and then doing that action again, that would be an intervening event. Knowing the rule is an intervening event. But specifically, I want to talk about strokes. So a stroke is an intervening event.
Completion of a stroke.
Completion of a stroke. And a stroke that actually does not count. So say you cause your ball to move in the fairway and replace it, hit your ball and it hits a power line, and there's a local rule saying you have to replace and replay your shot, and then you replace and replay it, and then you kick your ball again and replace it. You get the one shot penalty for moving your ball. There'd be no penalty for hitting the power line and playing again, that's fine. But then you get the other, there's a stroke there that's not going to count, but because you cause your ball to move again, you get two single one-shot penalties under 9.4 for causing your ball to move. So strokes at a wrong ball, the stroke doesn't count, but the penalty of the wrong ball is an IE. Now there is a time that they don't penalise you for the two penalties if you hit the same wrong ball.
Right. Because so 6.3 says, I hate this expression of the world stops.
Yeah.
Right. But effectively you need to correct that wrong ball mistake.
To be honest, I still get a little bit confused with it as well. But what they, because the rule 6.3 is specific for a situation and allowing you to only have that one general penalty, in match play it's not going to matter because you lost the hole as soon as you hit it the first time. But in stroke play, they're only going to give you the one general penalty, not a general penalty for each time you hit that wrong ball because there was a stroke. But if you did something else, that is where the IE is important, and you can still get another penalty for something else. It's not just labelled as the total of two strokes for the wrong ball. Did I make that pretty clear?
Yeah, so the way I say it is, we know one of the intervening events is the completion of a stroke, and it's any stroke that you made with the intention of that stroke to count towards your hole score. So when you hit a wrong ball, your intention was, this is my ball and this is going to count towards holing out. Even though we know that stroke doesn't count and you get the general penalty, that's the completion of the stroke. If you hit a stroke that needs to be replayed because it, you know, hit a power line or the ball broke into more than one piece or some of the other reasons why you replay a stroke, that stroke is still an intervening event. The only stroke that you make at a ball that's not an intervening event is a practice stroke.
Yeah.
Every other single one where you mean this stroke is going to count towards my score for this hole, that's an intervening event. Yeah.
Yeah, so the practice stroke, that's where we're going to finally get to. The practice stroke is not an intervening event, whereas all the other strokes where you have the intention to complete that stroke count.
With your goal of holing out with that ball. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Carry on.
No, and of course this is a new thing, right? It's been around for 13 months now?
Yes. Intervening events. And they tried to simplify. I mean, I've got the old books right here. Multiple and single were quite difficult, quite confusing.
Related and unrelated.
Related and unrelated. Oh my God. Bringing back the memories. So they've tried to make it as clean cut as possible. It's just all these other situations that sort of pop up, and people are like, oh, well, is that an intervening event? Is that an intervening event? And so that we're getting most people would say we've done it, we've got there, but getting that message out to people and telling them what an actual intervening event, that's where we're at the moment.
So we know there's only two intervening events. I think the completion of the stroke is pretty straightforward.
Oh, I thought there were three.
Well, it's completion of a stroke and then the being aware of the breach or uncertainty.
Right, so there's only two. Okay.
Yeah, under 1.3. So I think where the confusion comes up is that second one. Being aware or becoming aware of a breach of a rule, when you're told of a breach, or even if you're uncertain whether you've breached a rule, that's the second intervening event.
Yeah.
that's where the most confusion comes up. And you and I have said that a player who has no knowledge of the rules can take 20 practice swings in a bunker, touching the sand every single time, and cop one general penalty.
Yeah.
If you do it, you'll cop 20 general penalties.
Yeah, yeah. Because I know the rule.
For the same action.
And so
20 times.
What we hate is the fact that sometimes if you know the rules, you're worse off. But at the same time, if you know the rules,
you won't do it.
You're an idiot if you do it.
But it's interesting.
On purpose. If you do it on purpose, you're an idiot.
But even you could do it accidentally.
Well.
Take a bit of sand out on your backswing, you know. And
but am I going to do it two times in a row?
No, probably not. But the point being is...
I was thinking maybe it would happen where I thought it was a waste bunker.
Yeah.
Not a bunker. It was just a waste area.
Waste area, yeah. And then someone told you, and then you did it again.
Yeah.
Now you've got two penalties.
Or someone said the waste bunker, and I'd already done it three times. I would have been like, oh, now that I know it's a waste bunker.
Yeah.
I went through again. Three separate ones? Because I knew that the rule, that I shouldn't have done it, but I didn't know it was a bunker.
No,
because
the committee would say, were you aware?
That was a waste area.
That was a waste area. It was a bunker. No, I thought they were all waste. Yeah. I didn't see a rake. And you go, okay, that's fine. You weren't aware. You weren't uncertain. One penalty.
That's good.
Not three.
Like one, two-shot penalty, but
not
one,
three of them.
One breach.
Yeah. But anyway, that's if there's confusion with intervening events and where it's been, people have gone their deep dives into exploring the nuances of the intervening events. It's definitely that second one.
Yeah.
Not the completion of a strike.
Yeah. All right. What's your next one?
Tournament. TIOs, we were talking about that just before we went to air. Is that what we do? Go to air? Start, press record?
We're live.
Before we go live, great response from a player at the back. This is at Cobram Baruga on the 18th hole. I was just sitting there at the back with two other referees because I think there was only like one more group to come in. Guy calls us over. I got there quickest. And... he said, I've got interference, you know, from the marquee at the back of the 18th. I said, that's fine. I said, you can play it as it lies. I said, we can take normal interference. We'll come out a fair way to find your nearest point. Or, of course, we've got the drop zone here available for you. Now, the drop zone was half the distance to the hole from where his ball was. So there was that disbelief from him. What I can drop it there? Like, it's nearer the hole. And not only is it nearer the hole, it's like half the distance to the hole. And the disbelief on his face. I said, yeah, you can drop it there. That drop zone is an option available to you. I think he was a bit surprised because it was closer to the hole and players have it in this, I guess, in their mind that when I'm taking relief, there's no way I can get closer to the hole. Well, of course, there are times where you can get closer to the hole. Even taking relief out of a penalty area, you're going to be closer to the hole if that's where the reference point is. So anyway, just had the same thing, excuse me, on the back. And I always... there was a junior on Sunday, second last group, the junior who actually won, and his ball had come to rest right up against the marquee in amongst all the television cables and stuff. I had to tell him, you can play it as it lies. And he had a bit of a smile. I said, and I'd love to see that. Because we're not about it. But I'd like to tell them, you can play it. You don't have to take, or I said again, we can swing out on the drop zone. But there was a few of those on the weekend. Definitely rabbit holes at Cobram Baruga. Here's one thing. Now, I spoke to the...
With rabbit holes, were you going to... Did you have one or you just had multiple?
There was one in particular where his ball wasn't in the holes. There were two holes 6 inches apart from each other, pretty reasonably deep. And his ball was in the middle of them.
Yeah.
But his ball was clearly had been... The dirt had been scraped away.
Okay.
No doubt about it. So I just saw that as a pathway leading into the two holes. So that was pretty obvious. And he was on the... whole side of a pretty large tree. How it got there, I don't know. It must have been another tree and come back. And I said, and I got down on my knees, I said, yeah, that's fine. We'll just find the nearest point. I even just said, well, that's probably the nearest point there. I said, you got a club length from that. And I just looked up at him and smiled. I said, that's a bit of a lucky break, isn't it? And he had a good smile because it was a lucky break. But he got out away from the tree. And that was a pathway, not a very big pathway. That was definitely... scratchings leading into those two holes, but no issues. Because I think that can be a bit subjective.
With that, animal holes. With that local rule, and this is on most tours, or at least the ones that I operate on, there's no relief. We don't provide relief for interference to starts.
No.
It's only for lie and swing.
Yeah, the ball, yeah.
would you, if if you denied him relief, would you have said, oh, that's an unlucky break, wasn't it?
No, definitely not. No. If it's good, if it's positive, it's a bit of a laugh, like the kid with the ball in the cables, I'll say you can play as a lot.
What if it was a player that you didn't like and you're like,
suck on that. Yeah, that's. I'll do that. I would never referee. I should not referee another event if that happens. That player should contact the tour. All right, two more for you. I cannot believe so many players don't know this rule. Ball in the general area. You've got an irrigation sprinkler box 5 metres in front of them.
Yeah.
Clearly interfering with their line of play.
Yes.
Every day of the week, that's in their way.
Right.
And they believe they're entitled to relief. And I have to say,
it's just like a tree.
I said, if your ball was on it, if you had to stand on it, if you're going to hit it with your swing, sure, but not for line of play. Said on the green, yes, but not out here. It happened at Cobramberuga, happened on the 18th hole at Rosebud. If I can name drop, Adam Scott asked that question on the 18th hole when he pushed his drive right on Sunday in amongst the pine needles, and the box was, he said, do I get relief? It's like, he must know that. Maybe he was just
sometimes
asking just in case I got it wrong.
There might be a time when it's changed into a TIO by some committees.
Right. So there's just that, what have they got to lose by that's asking?
Right. That's right. I mean, we have light towers at Jeddah, which I'll be there in about 4 weeks. We made sure that they were removable obstructions because they're in the rough, and you know, it's just, oh well, you just got to hit around it like a tree. But the players always ask
because they're not TIOs, is that right?
They're not TIOs.
Right. Well, that's, I could understand a player.
These things are permanent there, and we played the Caddy Championship under lights, and we'll do again in 5 weeks' time. So, but yeah, they are not TIOs. They're not temporary. They're fixed in the ground, but the players like, this is not normal to the golf course. So this is not normal to most golf courses.
It's not there 52 weeks
so
a year.
So surely we get through relief. It's like, no, they're normal to this golf course. They're not abnormal. So we've made them immovable obstructions. If you had swing lie or stance, we'd give it to you, but line of play, no.
And this player had probably 20 people standing right next to him, and I didn't want to embarrass him in any way, shape or form. So I actually almost whispered to him just so no one else heard it. And I just said, look, these are, I won't whisper here so you can hear me. I said, these are permanently here.
Right.
You don't get relief just for line of play. They're here every day of the year. You don't get relief. I've got one more for you from Cobramberuga. A player's mum called me over, saw me first and waved me over. Then the player saw me and waved me over. And on his left upper arm and his tricep, he'd been bitten by a wasp repeatedly.
Okay.
Huge amount of swelling, like really big. His arm was just completely red.
Yep.
Like this head cover over here, just so red. And he was in a bit of discomfort.
Yeah.
And so we just had to work out what to do. And it reminded me of clarification 5.6A2, which I did know.
Which is?
Now, it never came into play, but he certainly took some time because we got the medic out there to provide some attention. It was on the 13th hole. His group had gone ahead to the 14th on a par 3 and actually already teed off and were putting on the 14th green when he was still receiving attention.
Okay.
So the clarification you speak of, if a player gets a sudden illness or injury, such as heat exhaustion, a bee sting, or being struck by a golf ball, the committee should normally allow that player up to 15 minutes to recover before the player's failure to continue play would be unreasonably delaying play. 15 minutes. If something untoward happens like that. And that was untoward. And he would have taken the best part of 10 minutes to get that treatment, to get some cream, to have a tablet.
The group behind played on?
They were early on. No, they were waiting then. Because they were putting out on 13 green. He was like 10 metres off the green getting treatment.
Right.
And his group were already now putting on 14 green par 3.
Right. So you just let them play. What happens if the group behind, would you just let them go through?
Because the other two were already putting on 14.
Right.
The other two already got ahead. We actually got permission on the radio. Do you mind if we just drive him down to the groom?
Right.
As you know, transportation policy. And the tournament director said, in the interest of just getting him moving, yes, just put him in the buggy.
Okay.
In the cart, driving down that 150 metres. It would save 30 seconds, but it's something.
Did he make the cut? Or was this on Saturday, Sunday?
I have a feeling he did make Yeah, no, he did make the cut. It was on the weekend.
After the Wasp.
It was on the weekend, I'm almost certain. Yeah.
It was on the weekend that
this happened.
I wonder how he played after that.
Didn't make the cut last weekend, but didn't make that.
Did you ask him how he was? How his arm was?
I saw him the next week. He said it took a few days to die down. Yeah. I did see him the next tournament.
Has he ever had a Wasp sting before?
I think that was the first question was asked. Is this something you might have an allergic reaction to? And it was all negative.
So do they sting or bite? I know they have a sting.
I know they have a second crack.
Yeah, because they have a pointy one, whereas the bee has a hook in the end.
Okay.
So if a bee stings you, it actually kills itself. It's like kamikaze.
Well, I knew that, but I believe wasps are not happy with just one crack.
No, because they...
They'll have a few.
They'll have a go and have a crack again, and they don't kill it, they don't die.
Wow, it was swollen. It was so red.
Yeah, wow.
So swollen, yeah.
I always wonder about that. Like, if you give them the 10 or 15 minutes, it says 15 minutes, and the group, do you let the group play behind and then they just keep going and then you just join this guy and you're the marker for this guy?
On his own?
Or
I wouldn't have thought so.
Or do you tell his group, do you tell them to wait and let that other group go through and then they...
Yeah. You know how careful the timings are managed?
Mm.
You wouldn't think. That's putting it out of fear. I mean, if everyone was 20 minutes under time, maybe you could do that.
Yeah, but you just wouldn't want them to wait for...
No, but that does happen. Like on the 10th hole, with a 2-tee start, I had one group and I radioed through to the tournament director. We had an unsuccessful ball search. No provisional played, jumps in my car, I drive him back to the 10th tee, drive him back. By the time the group behind teed off, they were already 7 minutes over.
Yeah.
So I radioed that through to the tournament director straight away, explained all that, you know, and that's the sort of stuff they want to know. They know that when they're X minutes over, three holes later, they go, oh, I know why, because I actually started 7 minutes over.
Yeah.
All that stuff's not in the rules book, is it? That's just all the tradecraft of referee.
Yeah.
To pick up.
Yeah.
All right, two more for you on the weekend, is that right?
Yeah, go for it.
With the wind on Friday at Rosebud, it was horrendous. It was massively unpleasant. You wouldn't believe it. I went through on the radio and just said, general broadcast. I said, God, I cannot believe we haven't got a phone call yet about a ball moved on the green. Sure enough, 20 minutes later, first call came through. There were four in total. One I wasn't called to. I just walked, she called me over. And the first question I ask is, have you lifted and replaced this ball on the putting green? She said, no, I was just about to mark it and it rolled. I said,
bugger.
No, it rolled closer to the hole.
Oh, nice.
I said, well, no, it's in its new, you play from its new location, new spot.
Oh, lucky.
I didn't say, oh, well, lucky you, but I said, no.
That's something that you would say normally.
No, I didn't like it. I didn't know that player at all, but that's an important one. That's exception one to 9.3. You know, a ball that has been, isn't that the Billy Horschel rule, we call it, at the Masters? Right? If the ball has been lifted and replaced on the putting green, it owns that spot.
We don't really call it that because that was before that rule would come in.
They changed it because of that rule.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why we call it the Billy Horschel rule.
Oh,
like the Ricky Fowler rule is...
Well, yeah.
Exception 2 to 9.3 is the Ricky Fowler rule.
I guess I never thought of calling it the Billy Horschel
rule. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean. But the fact that it now owns that spot in that particular case, she hadn't marked it yet. So she was able to take advantage of the fact that the ball had rolled closer to the hole. She only had a 2-foot putt anyway for birdie, but... that was one, and then finally on Sunday, my zone included the 8th hole, which was a par 3, about 170 metres for the guys, 150 for the girls, and it's normally a par 4, and they just set it up as a par 3, and right across the front was a yellow penalty area, which I got a lot of business from that penalty area.
Right.
And it's amazing yellow, and of course there was a full lock dropping zone circle placed a good 40 metres back from the pin in the middle of the fairway.
In a circle or the X?
Outer. Outer full lock. Outer full lock. It was a pretty big circle. Outer full lock circle. And it's amazing. I'll just park myself there because I knew I'd get a lot of business. You know, one group had two balls going. It's amazing they look up at me and go, drop zone. And I go over to say, it's actually, you don't have to go to the drop zone. I say, you've got three options. And most players didn't go to the drop zone.
Oh, wow.
but didn't, because I said, well, where did that last cross just cross here, right? In other words, it hit the bank and then rolled back in, or it's just flown in. I said, we'll go flag, stick to that point and go back as far as you want. And they were dropping it really quite close in some nice fluffy grass.
Yes, the pen was on the right. Well,
it was on the right.
On the around the lake.
Yeah.
Go back this way. I mean, hardly any lake.
Yeah, correct. And we know that, correct. And we know that drop zones are there for convenience.
Yeah.
They're for speed of play. And sometimes we have pin positions where a ball can cross the yellow penalty area and the back on the line is just miles out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just inconvenient. Because then you're forcing the player to then go back to the tee again.
Yeah.
By providing that drop zone provides that option. Most players did not use the drop zone. I just, when I said back on the line, they go, oh, said to them, I'm dropping here. Like it's, the hole's just there, like 10 metres away, whereas the dropping zone was 40 metres away. It was just a little chip up and down.
Yeah.
And one guy go previous stroke, that was his option. What's that, 17.1D1?
Yeah.
His previous stroke was from the back left bunker. So he put it on and it just wouldn't stop and just kept rolling, rolled straight in because he was unhappy. And he looked up to me and goes, drop zone. I said, no, you've got three options. I said, you can go to the drop zone, go back on the line, but you can actually go back to the bunker. Meanwhile, there's a spectator raking the bunker. He goes, I think I'll go back to the bunker. That guy's raking it. So that's okay. So ball's out of the bunker. That's fine. I said, and then he looks at me and goes, oh, I don't know where I hit it from. I said, that's fine. Just use your best, you know, reasonable estimate, best judgment, all those words. I said, just wherever you think.
It didn't.
And then I said, then you got a club length from that spot.
He didn't plug when he dropped it.
Oh, I didn't see it. I wasn't that close. I know he walked away with a six,
yeah, right.
Signed for a six on that par three. But it just provides a lot of, especially the yellow. And I think, again, the player just immediately goes, oh, drop zone. No, you got three options. It's only one of them.
Yeah.
There's no preference to it. It's your choice. You got three of them. And as I said, I saw very few people use the drop zone.
Yeah.
And it was normally someone where I'd actually driven away. And I was coming back and I'm dropping in the drop zone.
Yeah.
Drop in zone. So, yeah, there you go.
That's right. Make sure you get it right. Drop zone is our newsletter.
Drop in
zone.
Struggle with every week.
Do 90% of every week.
90%?
Oh, sorry, 100% of every week. And the dropping zone is under...
A relief area under 14.3 or whatever.
E2?
No, it's only two.
E1.
One?
E1.
Yeah.
E2 is cleaning ball, E3 is
preferred lies.
Fantastic, Stuart. So
there's a few real tournament tour.
So how many tournaments have you done now?
That's three in a row this year.
Overall.
Oh, Jesus. Too many to count.
10, 15.
This season?
Nah, just overall. Don't you keep a list of all the ones you do? I do.
I've thought about doing that.
I think I'm up to 56, 70, 72 or something.
I would think 15-ish.
Amateur, professional events.
Yeah, professional. Yeah, amateurs. I would think 15 each. Because I did six last season.
Yeah.
And I've done more than that this season. And I've got Vic Open with you this week. And then I've got the national as well.
The national one would be great.
Yeah.
Right. So getting into the Clubland stories. We've got Colin from Waimate back again. Happy New Year, Blakey and Stuart. Well, Happy New Year to you, Colin, too. Colin and Colleen are playing a Canadian foursomes. Oh, we love Canadian foursomes. Against Kevin and Angie. Angie! On the par 4, 5th at Waimate. Kevin is about to play Angie's tee shot, which is just off the fairway. Kevin has taken some practice swings when he accidentally hits the ball and the ball scuttles along the ground a few paces. Angie plays the next shot, which is topped.
Oh, no.
Kevin plays to the right rough of the green that Angie thins her chip through the green. Kevin chips onto the green. Angie misses the putt. Kevin holds out and 8 is written down. Rules question. Was Kevin's practice swing counted as a stroke? Should the ball be replaced and who would play the next stroke? Or have they played from a wrong place and incurred a penalty stroke? Have they not corrected their mistake and more penalties apply? What actions were taken to resolve the situation? At the time, Colin and Colleen weren't sure of the ruling, as were Kevin and Angie. Angie being a learner golfer, there was no real discussion about Kevin's practice hit because they had carried on playing the hole out. Later on in the clubhouse, someone did say they could have replaced the ball, so still not 100%. Neither group's won the Canadian foursomes, with the winners having a net 64.
Okay, so we've established there was a stroke play then.
Yeah, well,
and they're playing foursomes.
Yeah. Okay. it does sound like it's a stroke play event. So when you say against Kevin and Angie, it was actually against everyone else in the field. Else, yeah. So only use the word against for match play for that same group. Just a tidbit for the future. You can even just say match play at the start or Stalford or stroke play or something like that. But so with the playing stroke play, Kevin has taken a practice swing and he's hit the ball.
Mm-hmm.
The practice swing had no intent to hit the ball. So that's a penalty under 9.4, penalty of one shot. Replace the ball, and then who hits the next shot?
The person who's still supposed to hit the ball, which is
Kevin. Correct. Spot on. Kevin had not made a stroke, so it's still his turn. They need to replace the ball so they don't play for a wrong
But they
place.
Haven't done that, have they?
No.
And then Angie hit the next shot.
So Angie's played out of order. That's a general a two-shot penalty, and then they haven't corrected it. So they actually haven't finished the hole.
So because they haven't corrected the order of play, as soon as they tee off on the next hole, they are disqualified.
Yeah. 22.3. On each hole, the partners must make each stroke for the side in alternating order. Any penalty strokes for the side do not affect the partner's alternating order of play. It's a general penalty for making a stroke in the wrong order, and the stroke in stroke play, the side must correct the mistake. If the side does not correct the mistake before making a stroke to begin another hole or for the last hole around before returning its scorecard, the side is disqualified. Exactly what the podcast said. Okay, Colin. So you'll be able to tell everyone in the clubhouse next time you see them at Waimate. Right, we have Feather Duster. Feather Duster, a player in a stroke play round or stroke round, hits his tee shot just beyond a seat fixed to the ground, i.e. immovable. Okay, pretty standard stuff. The nearest point of relief playing a right-handed shot, the player's normal way that they play, meant that the ball would be dropped in long grass about half a metre beyond the seat to allow for the follow-through of a right-handed shot to be free of the interference of the seat. Or the absolute nearest point of relief was on the green side if they were to play the shot left-handed. The marker allowed the player to nominate that point of relief, and dropping the ball within one club length meant that he could play the shot right-handed. He proceeded as above, finishing with a four for the hole. What do you think of that?
Sorry, can you just... I have having trouble finding the absolute point of relief in the definitions.
Yeah, apparently there's two. So what this comes down to, what this is, this question is all about, is whether it's reasonable actions to change from right-handed to left-handed, basically to get free relief in the nicer point of relief. And the answer is no. If you're just changing, just to, because in the end he played right-handed, or they played right-handed, so they had no intention to play left-handed at all. And so they weren't allowed to say, oh, I'm going to play left-handed, then drop it and then play right-handed, especially because it was just long grass. Obviously, it's not a nice point of relief, but it's not about being the nicest point of relief. It's about being the nearest point of relief. If there was a situation, the rules do allow for you to change to left-handed if that is reasonable, but in this situation, it was not reasonable. How do I know it's not reasonable? I'm just going off the facts of what they've written here. Just trying to avoid long grass by changing handedness is not reasonable. If it was a situation where you couldn't, and it's not that you can't play the shot because of the seat, it's if you can't play the shot because of something else. If the seat wasn't there, how would you play the shot? Right-handed. Well, then you have to find your nearest point of relief right-handed. If the seat wasn't there, there's a tree right in front of me, so I couldn't play left-handed. I couldn't play right-handed. I have to play left-handed. Now that makes more sense why you'd attempt to play left-handed. You take the relief left-handed, and then you drop, and then it comes into a situation, and you can play right-handed. That is allowed. But that wasn't because you couldn't play it right-handed because of the seat. It was because you couldn't play it right-handed because of the tree. So it has nothing to do with where the relief area is and how nice or not nice that is. It has to do is with the reasonable actions of whether you could play the ball as it lies without the interference by the immovable obstruction in this case.
The very condition you're taking relief
from.
Yeah,
correct.
And as you say, the long grass probably wouldn't come into it.
No way.
Remember, the player can always play as it lies.
The player can play as it lies, but in this case, they've dropped it in a wrong place. They've played from a wrong place, which is a general penalty. Depending how close it was to the green, would depend on, and this is actually a really good one, would depend on whether it's a serious breach. So say if it was a par five, and by dropping in the fairway, they could hit 3-wood right-handed, but if they dropped in the long grass, they could only hit like a wedge out 40 metres. To me, even though there's a difference of 5 metres in the dropping area, I would say that's a serious breach.
Because they've gained a significant amount.
It's significant. Like the difference between a 40-metre pitch shot and a 240-metre 3-wood is big, right? But if it was fairway on both sides and one you could hit, it was right near the green, and one you could chip on the green and the other one you could chip to the front of the green, and there's a difference of 5 metres, I wouldn't think was as serious in my mind as if I was on the committee.
Who's that? Yeah, so who determines that? The committee.
The committee. And the committee is whoever the committee is. It could be you and me. It could be...
the club pro.
The Augusta Golf Club committee at the Masters. It could be the club pro as an extension of the match committee at the club. Whoever that committee is... been or the committee has nominated for that day.
What about if someone else playing in that group is on the committee, but not, they're just playing their round, and he says to that player, geez, I think that might be a serious breach. You may need to correct that. What could the player do if they're not sure if it's a serious breach or not?
Well, they could correct it. They say, I'm going to play 2 balls. They correct it by playing it as it should have been played, or they continue with the other one, play it as it was, and then the committee have a discussion at the end of the, you know, going through the whole 2-ball situation, yeah, 20.1 C3.
Yeah, well, it is mentioned under 14.7 as well.
But you can, yeah, so you do that, then the committee would decide whether the player was right or the other committee member was correct in telling them that the player was incorrect.
You know, I like to be a man of the people, Blakey. At these events, I go and speak to the volunteers and I say, are you a member here? Most of them are. How long have you been a member? I always say, oh, the course is in great condition and, you know, you must be thrilled and blah, blah, blah. This one woman I spoke to on the weekend hasn't been playing very long. She goes, oh, I've got a rules question for you. Go ahead. She said, oh, you know, I was stuck in between these tree roots and I thought we have this local rule which gives you free relief if you have interference. But I was playing with these old women who have been playing for years and they said, oh, no, young lady, no, you can't take free relief from the tree root, you know. And they almost intimidated me, so I didn't. So what do I do? Because I found out later there is a local rule, one of your favourites. Local rules about relief from tree roots. So I then explained to her that it's your ball, and whilst you can run stuff by your marker, we've had this conversation so many times, and I said it again to this woman. I said, a marker is not a referee. They're not a rules official. It's just simply the eyes and ears of the committee. That's all they're doing. They're just verifying your scores. And I said, if they don't want to sign your scorecard, that's their choice. I said, it's your ball. You play it as you want. I mentioned that about the marker, and then I mentioned the 2 balls. And of course, she goes, oh, no idea you could do that. I said, yeah, if you're not sure, just to say, look, I'm going to hit this ball as it lies, and then I'm going to take free relief as I think I can. And then you sort it out later. But again, it's that whole idea of running stuff by your marker, you know. I find it sometimes funny that players at professional level will run stuff by their marker even when there's a referee right there. And they could just so easily call a referee over and would get the official answer rather than his mate saying, yeah, I think you're okay. Anyway, enough on that. Get off my high horse.
Oh, no, that's...
About markers.
No, that's... Yeah, we do have that conversation quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The two balls is pretty simple, although I just prefer that everyone just learnt the rules so they don't need to worry about playing two balls. But at the same time, sometimes it's not about the rule and about the facts of the case. So the two balls is actually really important because there could be some other evidence that you can't get hand of or hold off straight away, and so you need to wait till later on. Okay, your ball did move, but you put it back for one and you play it from where it lies for the other. So you're right, you're only going to get one shot to two shots, something like that.
So it reminds me of a situation I had at a professional event 12 months ago where I got called over and I didn't know the answer. It was just simply the status of an object. And so I said, give me a second, I'll find out. The other player goes, mate, just play two balls. And I said to the other guy, no, don't play two balls. Give me 10 seconds, I'll tell you the answer. It was almost like undermining my role. That's how I felt. I felt it was undermining. Like, this referee doesn't know, just play two balls. And I said, no, don't play two balls. And I got on the radio. Sure enough, 8 seconds later, I had the answer. No relief. Couldn't believe the other player... Firstly, knew about the two balls, right, 20.1C3, but then even told the player in my presence, play two balls. And I'm standing there.
Yeah, I understand that would be quite frustrating. But at the same time, I'm really impressed.
Me too, that he knew. I just didn't like the fact that he mentioned it in front of me.
I get that.
When I got called over to him.
I would have been a bit flabbergasted too. But at the same time, you know, they've obviously promoting... Because of the lack of referees that the PGA Tour of Australasia have, they're actually promoting, hey, if you're unsure, play two balls. That's actually...
It's written in the local rules.
I'm actually really impressed.
It is written. Every tournament has that on the... It wasn't actually a PGA event, but a non-order of merit event. But every PGA event, local rule actually talks about, here's the referee names, here are the numbers you call, and unsure, play two balls.
I really appreciate that.
It does say that.
Right, GRQOTW 108, shoot it at us.
Is this me?
It is you.
When are you going to write the next one?
So, GRQOTW 108, written by Stuart.
Okay, GRQOTW for episode
108. Oh, no, Andy the average golfer again.
He's up to no good. Playing in a stroke round at Wombat Hills... Andy, the average golfer, has a 12-year-old caddy as part of a school program the club is running. He is playing, as in Andy, he's playing the drivable par 4, fifth hole, and he plays his second shot to the green. However, it goes too far and over the green towards a red penalty area. As Andy arrives behind the green, he finds his caddy, who had walked ahead, standing there near the red line, laughing with some of his friends. Andy, the average golfer, inquires about his ball and discovers that his caddy had deliberately kicked his ball as it was approaching the penalty area, which kept it out. Andy estimates the spot where the ball would have come to rest in the penalty area. Based on a brief conversation with his caddy and friends, he drops a ball inside the penalty area based on that estimation. He then decides to take penalty area relief and drops his ball again outside the penalty area. Andy holes out in 4 more strokes. What is Andy, the average golfer's score for that hole?
That is really confusing.
Oh, come on.
That is a tough one. So he dropped the ball inside the PA.
He did.
Very good. GRQOTW 108. See if you can get that one. Send us the answer in the YouTube comments. That's another one. Okay, so that is the end of GRQ OTW 108 Golf Rules Questions podcast from Blakey and podcast man of the people McPhee. We'll see you next episode.